After Peter confesses that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of the living God, which is found in the 16th chapter of Matthew, the 16th verse, Jesus reveals the ultimate purpose of his ministry. These words prove hard to accept, even for a disciple whom Jesus has called Rock. Our gospel reading this morning comes from the 16th chapter, according to Matthew, beginning with the 21st verse. From that time on, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and undergo great suffering at the hands of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "God forbid it, Lord! This must never happen to you." But Jesus turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." Then Jesus told his disciples, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit them if they gain the whole world but forfeit their life? Or what will they give in return for their life? For the Son of Man is to come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will repay everyone for what has been done. Truly I tell you, there are some standing here who will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." This is the word of the Lord. Well, it is a gift to be able to sit down at our family altar for a bit of conversation. And it seems to me that this is really a perfect time of year to be in the midst of conversation about what's going on in your heart and what's happening in the midst of your family. So, here in Bismarck, school officially starts tomorrow. Staff has been at school all week. Mandan started last week already, and there are other schools that have already made this transition. So tonight will be probably an exciting and an anxious night for some kids that are getting ready to go back to school. But I want to tell you a little story. Yesterday, our kids stopped over with the grandkids. Normally, the little six-month-old jumps right into my arms and we begin to play. But yesterday, as I took him, his lip began to quiver, and pretty soon he busted out in shrieks. He had been to daycare all week last week, and in his 6 months, it's the first time that he has really been separated from mom and dad and family. So even at 6 months of age, he is feeling a bit of anxiety about the world which has changed around him. Now, you may not have school kids in your house, but my sense is, with other things that are going on in the world, you too may be feeling anxious. That's a good thing to sit around the family altar table and talk about, to be honest with one another about what is happening in our lives, and then to be willing to hold one another in prayer. One of the gifts of having this water here is to mark a cross of Christ on the forehead of each person, whether they're little people or whether they're an adult. And if you're at home alone, you can mark the sign of the cross on your own head, reminding yourself that God is with you wherever you go, whatever is going on. If your heartbeat starts to rise and your chest starts to tighten, to just breathe, remember that watery cross, remember that Christ is with you. God bless as we enter into this changing season and into this new school year. Well, grace to you in peace this morning from God our Father and our risen Savior, Jesus the Christ. So Friday, I presided over the funeral of Marjorie Robinson, a member of Trinity
Lutheran. I'd never met her.
What I learned in the course of preparing for the funeral and for the funeral itself was that we had some connections. She and her husband farmed south of Benedict, really, as the crow flies, not that far from my parents' farm. But what was amazing for me to learn was that where Marjorie and Larry's farm was, just over the hill, was my mom's aunt's and uncle's farm. I've got cousins that still farm there to this day. When Marjorie and Larry retired from farming, they rented the land out, and it turns out, I learned at the funeral, they rented it to the father of a couple of young people that I went to school and high school with. And all of a sudden, I was reminded of just how small this world is that we live in. Part of Marjorie's life story was that as a young woman, a number of years before she and Larry met and married, she moved with her family to the West Coast, where she worked in the shipyards. Part of the Rosie the Riveter Brigade that produced ships and planes for the World War II war effort. One of her jobs was to burn holes in huge sheets of steel that would become the portholes of ships. Now, I've got to tell you, I would have loved to have sat down and heard more about her life and what that had to have been like. What was it like to be a woman who was pulled into this war effort? What was it like being a young woman from the prairie who all of a sudden one day, the first day of work, showed up at the shipyards? What did she remember? What was that like? It got me thinking about what I've heard about those war years. Years of rationing. Everything from sugar to tires. My father-in-law was drafted, but he got sent home because as a child he had rheumatic fever. The military docs looked at him, and when they learned that fact, they said, "See you later," and sent him back to the prairie. So he headed back to farming with a steel-wheeled tractor, because there was no rubber tires that he could find. And he would talk about the rough, rough ride of that steel-wheeled tractor. In those days, sacrifices were made. People raised victory gardens, and there were scrap metal drives to pull together iron and steel that could be smelted and turned into things for the war effort. There was limited travel, and there was much, much more in the way of sacrifices. I'm not so sure that we're good at making sacrifices these days. Maybe it, in part, is the way we've been taught. I was raised on the Burger King jingle that I should have it my way. And if Burger King wasn't a good enough teacher, McDonald's made sure that I knew that I deserve a break today. Those jingles from the 60s and 70s. And other messages that have come from advertisers and continue to come, which are meant to drive our desires to consume and hold and have and to get more. Words that say that I've earned it, I deserve it, I need it. There are no limits. After all, the advertisers want to make sure we know. Into this comes a word from Jesus. Deny yourself. Pick up your cross and follow me. Jesus knew exactly where he was going. He tells us in the beginning of this text that he is heading to Jerusalem. The tension
which has been mounting between him and the religious leaders, is going to crescendo there in Jerusalem in his arrest, his beating, his trial, and his death. That's the destination. There's no question about it. But Peter has other plans. Maybe plans that would be less bloody, at least for Jesus. Something which was not quite as costly. But Jesus will have none of it. No, he says. We're headed to Jerusalem. We are headed to the cross. We're on a journey where Jesus will give up all, including his life, for the sake of others. It is an act of incredible love. In the midst of it, Jesus says, "If you want to be my follower, deny yourself. Pick up your cross and follow me." Deny yourself. That's Jesus' invitation. So how is that ringing in your ears? This call to follow Jesus can be a difficult one. It is a call to live by different standards than the world wants to promote. It is a call to put Jesus at the center of our lives. But before you get too concerned about that, in the midst of all of those other things that are so important in our lives, like family and work and so much more, I truly believe that when we put Jesus in the center of our lives, the rest of those things will easily fall into place as well. Because when Jesus is at the center, we are grounded in what's important, and then we can serve family and we can serve others through our work. And in the end, that's what Jesus' call is. It is a call to servanthood, a call to deny ourselves and instead look to put others first, to serve them, to care for them, to walk with them, to listen to their stories, their needs, and their concerns. But here's a secret. In the act of denial, we can find abundance. Jesus, in our text today, says, "Those who lose their life will find it." In the midst of this type of living, we find real life. For me, this is stewardship. We are called to be caretakers of all that God has blessed us with. When we use our gifts to serve others, we can experience profound joy. Why? I believe it's because we are living in the sweet spot, in the groove. We are living as God created us to live. Let me share an example. Almost every time I walk downstairs here at Trinity, I run into laughter. I run into smiles. I run into people who are working hard, getting meals ready for the banquet. And while there aren't as many volunteers who are needed for each meal, those who are here are often filled with joy. Why? Because they're using their time well. They're serving others. They are living as we have been created to live. And that is abundant life. There is joy-filled living. When we walk into this denial of self and a life of servanthood. And Jesus is the perfect example if we look at his life of what servanthood looks like. It was just a few weeks ago that we had the story of the feeding of 5,000. Jesus had been out and about. Crowds came from everywhere to listen to him. The day went long. It got late. The disciples said, "Lord, send them away. They got to eat something." And Jesus said, "No, you feed them." Then taking a few loaves of bread and a few fish, he blessed them, broke them, gave them away, and people ate. They ate to their fill, and there were 12 baskets full. What does it look to deny yourself and serve? It looks like a meal for 5,000 men, not including women and children. Jesus, on the night that he was betrayed, in the upper room, wrapped a towel around his waist, took a bowl of water, knelt down, and washed the feet of his disciples. He put on the role of a servant and cared for them. Hours before his arrest, hours before the trial would begin, he shows us what it looks like to be a servant. And it's not always easy. Remember that same night in the Garden of Gethsemane, he kneels down to pray. "Lord, take this cup from me. But not my will, but thy will be done." Jesus shows us what denial looks like. He lived it. He denied himself all the way to his death, because through that death, death was destroyed and the life of all God's creatures was made possible, including you and I. I need to put a little aside in here for just a moment, though. Deny yourself is not a call which ever justifies allowing someone else to abuse you. You are a beloved child of God. It is not being a servant to allow another to physically, emotionally, or sexually abuse you. Jesus never called us and never justified that kind of denial. As a matter of fact, it is exactly the opposite that he stood for. No, denial looks much different. It looks like a mother getting up in the middle of the night to feed a hungry child or to coddle a terrified child, even though she is bone tired. She gets up to that call and cares for the other. It looks like a man setting aside his work to go to an elderly neighbor's home and clean their gutters or to do minor repairs for them. "Oh, don't worry, I've got plenty of time." It looks like a young person in the center of friends laughing and having a good time when they notice someone off by themselves, somber and quiet. It looks like breaking away and going to sit with them, to talk and be there. Jesus changed the world forever in his act of servanthood. Imagine how our world today might be changed if we began a Christ-centered movement of self-denial and neighbor-centered servanthood. It could be life-changing and world-changing. May we live into that. Amen.